Good morning. Buenos dias. How is everybody this morning? Matt, so nice to talk to you this morning. St. Patrick's Day. I see that everyone here in the studio has got a little bit of green on somewhere, whether a shirt or a hat or even a little pin. We saw some folks walking around.
Yeah.
Nice to be here this morning on a lovely, lovely day. And yes, we're all the way back up to 85 degrees today. Go figure. It was kind of chilly the last few days. It was brisk and rainy and all kinds of good stuff. We're excited to be here this morning on Rainmakers. Our guest this morning is Dr. Anna Greif, and she is CEO of JobPath. Anna, thank you for being here this morning. I'm so excited to have you in studio.
Well, it's great to be here. I really appreciate the invitation.
Thank you so much. We are excited here on Rainmakers every Monday morning to speak with leaders like yourself who are committed, dedicated. I know that you have been an advocate for many decades on economic development and also empowering individuals in the way that you do that for several years now. Leading JobPath is to empower students, like 1,000 students a year nearly, if I understand the numbers right. And they are working on their studies in industrial trades. And I know that we're going to hear a little bit more about that as we talk this morning. So again, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Matt, I know that we've got a lot going on here in studio and promotions of lots of events coming up later. I think later this week is our very first Morning Voice meet and greet
is what they're calling it.
Eat and greet. Yeah. That's right. That's going to be exciting. So,
yeah, Bamboo View, there's a spot for it coming up in the next break with all the details.
Yes, wonderful.
Absolutely.
So our listeners are going to know more about that. So on Morning Voice, we like to speak about community initiatives, that fun suite spot where agencies, small business, educators all come together to help collaborate, help create initiatives, or maybe help support causes that are going to make our community thrive here in Arizona, Tucson, and beyond. And Anna, you're doing a great job over at JobPath. I wonder if you might tell us just a little bit about what JobPath's mission is. Been around for many, many years.
I would love to. JobPath is an organization that has been around for 26 years.
Wonderful.
So a long time before I came on board. I came on about almost 5 years ago. I can't believe it's gone by so fast. What we do is we provide adults who are pursuing a post-secondary degree or credential in a technical field. So basically that means most of our students are in their late 20s, early 30s. They didn't find a career early in life. Maybe after high school they had to go straight into work. Maybe they didn't know what they wanted to do, and now they've got a family, and they are not getting ahead with a job that they currently have, and they realize that, for the most part, Pima Community College has this great program, and I want to go study there, and I'm going to become a nurse, or I'm going to become a welder, I'm going to go into IT. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the careers that we support. And for a lot of those careers, you have to basically quit your job. You cannot have a full-time job while you're going to school just because of the way that they're structured. So maybe you're not making a lot of money to begin with. And now you have to quit your job to go back to school.
That makes it tough.
And you've got to pay tuition and buy books and all that other stuff. And now you've got to figure out transportation to and from the college. And that is just such a challenging proposition. So JobPath can step in and help maybe find resources in the community that are available to help ease in all of that, maybe help you pay with tuition or whatever the case may be. And if there's a problem that arises that requires money, we have funding to help in those cases as well. So for example, if your car breaks down, well, that really throws a wrench into everything, right? So there's no resource, there's no coaching, there's no way around it other than just paying that mechanic. So we provide the resources to pay the mechanic, you know, get new tires, sometimes pay rent, whatever that student needs in order to stay focused on their education and keep moving forward and not have something like that cause them to have to drop out. Because once you drop out, it's really hard to get back in.
Absolutely. And like you said, if your target demographic of student, because there's so many different kinds of students, and if your target demographic are adults who already, like you said, have a family or maybe on a certain pathway and want to enhance that or change that, those little things can become big barriers very quickly. So do your students go through a training process, I would imagine an application process to be accepted into the program, and is that ongoing on a rolling basis, or is it just a few times a year that people have to apply?
So we like to be there when students need us. So great. Applications are accepted throughout the year.
Fantastic.
Criteria are basically you have to have qualify by income, and we go by HUD guidelines, which are federal. And if you do that, if you're in a program of study that we support, which are basically anything in healthcare, anything in the trade, so welding, machining, drafting, the aviation technology program at Pima, which is
sure.
a fabulous program
it
that
sure
leads
is.
To amazing careers in the aerospace field, and IT cybersecurity. So that's the bulk of the programs that we support. So you qualify by income, you're in a program that we support, and that's basically it. It's a first come, first serve program. But we try to manage our funds in such a way that we typically are able to fund people all the way till the end of the academic year. So sometimes we'll have people come to us in, you know, March, April, May, close to graduation, and they realize that they have to take certification exams, which can run you thousands of dollars.
Isn't that amazing?
It's incredible to me. And they get to that point and like, I was not planning on this, and
right.
I don't know how I'm going to pay for it.
Or I had one of those unexpected expenses come up
yes.
that took that money.
Yes. Yeah. So it's like I'm all the way at the end of the semester, and now here I am with, you know, my car broke down or my babysitter quit and I need to find somebody else to help with childcare.
Wow.
So those are, yeah. So we try to make sure that students have funding all the way till the end of the year.
That's great. Such a great resource. And I love that there's a focus on a variety of fields, like you said, and they tend to be, they sound very technical, or at least a real application of STEM. Although I always argue that STEM's everywhere. You know,
it
STEM is
yes.
even in the arts, STEM is everywhere. But when folks think about traditional STEM careers, it sounds like JobPath is also very much tackling that, which is a great match, not only for your vision individually, but sounds like even your pathway that got you to the roles, into the studies, certainly when you pursued your own doctorate degree, your EDD. Tell me a little bit, let's touch just a little bit on the fact, I'm just going to say you are one of the most passionate engineer-oriented, STEM-oriented community leaders that I know, making a real bridge between some of the softer skills, some of the STEM skills, and then what people can do in community about that. Has that always been a passion of yours?
It has. It has. Interestingly, one of the reasons I'm so passionate is because I'm a frustrated technologist. I grew up on a ranch. My dad was a cattle rancher, and I grew up surrounded by welding and, you know, bale wired together
sure.
everything that breaks and, you know, just trying to figure it out. So I've always found those kinds of challenges fun and exciting and you know, something that is just enjoyable to do. And then when I got to high school and I had options of what kind of classes I could take, I ended up we're talking, you know, long time ago, many, many years ago, I ended up in coding classes, and I took mechanical drawing and architecture
wow.
and I enjoyed math. I know that's not a common thing, but I did enjoy
math.
I do
too. And, I'm a mathy.
Yeah, and I took physics as an elective it's something that I really enjoyed. But nobody ever connected that passion and that enjoyment to a career for me.
Mm.
Nobody, and I think part of it was that I was a girl at a time when we weren't really focusing on having girls go into these kinds of careers.
That's right. Even now, it's still so much more talk about it, so much more mentoring for it, but it is still, I'd say, a fairly male-dominated field of study.
It is. And, you know, my mom, who has always been just a very strong supporter of everything I do and, you know, in my career over the years, when I was a freshman and she was helping me choose my classes, she said, you need to take sewing and typing. Those are going to be really good for your future. Mm-hmm. And the typing one, 100%. The sewing one, I learned something I don't like to do.
Yeah. You know what? I have to say, I learned something that I was just never, ever going to be so great at, but I did that too.
Right.
Typing, business machines, and then sewing, and had a beautiful machine that I was able to work on. And even to this day, I have my mother's first sewing machine, but just something that I think, learned how to do that. And so many other people in my family are wonderful at it. And I'm just only okay at it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm only okay. But really, when you think about it, that's kind of an applied, hands-on, math-oriented activity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I am glad I learned. That was just not going to be my passion, but it's a handy skill to have. But anyway, so fast forward, I attended the U of A. I ended up going into business, jumped around in a bunch of different options there, and I ended up in human resources, and I really focused on training and development.
Fantastic.
Which did end up being something that has been a kind of a track through my entire career, is that training and development component. I love teaching and I love helping adults learn new skills. So, but you know, as time has gone on, I've always dabbled in tech. I try to keep up with all of the new skills. There was a time when I was doing some desktop publishing as a side gig.
Wow.
And, you know, I've tried to implement technology in every organization that I've ever been involved with. I tend to be the person like that, the lay person. I'm not like, that's not my career, and I'm not professionally trained, but I'm the one that people call. It's like, my computer isn't working. and I'm happy to play that role. So, you know, then now I'm in a position where I can help guide people to careers that I know are high paying, but they maybe never had thought about themselves as going into a STEM field, because we have this image that STEM is only engineering, math, things that a lot of folks...
That you're in a lab all day long.
Yes, or that you have to be really good at math.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, can I just tell you that the math that you do in the classroom is not the math that you do in a place where you're solving a problem that you're really interested in, and now you have to do math in order to solve the problem, and the motivation, what happens in your brain, is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're able to say, oh, I understand. I'm doing this because it's going to lead me to this, you know, to this other number that I need in order to get this project solved, versus, you know, why is a train coming at me at 100 miles an hour?
Instead of the hypothetical story problems that we all get. And then you have to bubble the answer. But
exactly.
Well, that's fantastic. I can absolutely hear your energy about that. And after our break, we're going to talk a little bit more about how that applies to so many initiatives in the community. This is Rainmakers with Lydia Aranda. And our guest today is Dr. Anna Greif of JobPath.
And as Lydia helped remind us a little bit ago, The Morning Voice is having an meet and greet this Thursday, March 20th, 5:30 to 7:30 at Bamboo View Restaurant, 7018-7018 East Golf Links. It's a southwest corner of Golf Links and Kolb. Hope to see you all there. We'll have some the Morning Voice crew there to see you and say hi and meet you and hear from you. Now back to Lydia.
Good morning. Nice jolly music on a Monday morning that happens to be St. Patrick's Day. We are here at Rainmakers. My name is Lydia Aranda, and I'm very happy to have our guest this morning, Dr. Anna Greif, who is CEO of JobPath. And for those of you who are still learning a little bit more about JobPath, it's been around since being founded in 1998, is a nonprofit workforce development and advocacy agency that provides financial and social emotional support to adults pursuing short-term training in high-demand, high-wage industries. We love that. And boy, do we need a lot more of that all around in every community, but particularly here in Southern Arizona. I have to imagine that you get phone calls and applications and emails all the time, Anna.
We do. And what's really exciting is when we get phone calls from folks who don't really know what they want to do, mm-hmm. and they're asking for information, and we can help guide them and offer some suggestions, because we are very specific in the programs that we support. we're looking for programs that lead to family-sustaining wages.
Wonderful.
So our students, once they complete our program of study, they typically make about $50,000 a year more than they did when they started.
Wow.
On average. So we like to get folks into like the $70,000 range. So that they can really change their lives and their lives of their families. And in order to do that, we have to make sure that we're supporting the right careers where there's a real demand for those workers.
So not just good ideas that generally are good but may not be available here. Instead, you absolutely match it with what can people do right here who are studying right here. Is that correct?
Absolutely. We are looking at the labor market data all the time and really focusing, because we do fundraising. We get a lot of money from the city. A lot of the majority of our funding comes from the county, with whom we've had a partnership for since our inception. And so those are public dollars, and we want to make sure that they're utilized to their best possible capacity. Mm-hmm. So we're not just impacting the lives of the individual. We're also impacting our local business community, mm-hmm. who currently are struggling to fill jobs, and especially in the trades. They have so many people that are of retirement age, and they're trying to get new folks to fill those positions. So they're struggling. So we help support them. And then, of course, we want to make sure that our community is being served. So an example that I give is, you know, if you've been to the doctor's office recently and you had to wait longer than usual, or even worse, if you've been to the emergency room and you're just waiting and waiting and waiting, and they're like, well, we have beds available, but we just don't have the staffing to be able to open up those beds to patients. That's a problem we're helping to solve, because we're making sure that folks that are going into the healthcare industry and start their training, we make sure they complete the training. We help them pass their certification exams, and we connect them to the employer to make sure that they make it all the way through to that nursing job, to that tech job, so that those positions are filled, hospitals, clinics, doctor's offices are fully staffed, and we, as a result, wait less to get an appointment or to be seen.
That's wonderful. So it's really looking at the entire spectrum, helping in many touch points along that whole ecosystem. But I have to imagine you're involving also input from those business leaders or industry leaders or company leaders to hear what's happening. What are the needs of workforce? We often talk about workforce development just simply from a funding or an application, or did somebody get a job, and maybe from the applicant side. But what are we hearing from those who are seeking the workers? I would imagine from an advocacy standpoint that maybe JobPath is filling a particular niche there.
Yeah, that's our goal, absolutely. And we like to think of ourselves as being at the center of those two interactions, right? So we're supporting the students on the one hand, but we're also working very closely with employers. And so we're very active with local organizations that bring employers together, such as the Tucson Chamber, the Tucson Hispanic Chamber, and another organization that I'm very active with is the Arizona Technology Council.
Yes.
And those are places where I can speak directly to employers. I can speak, and you know, it's great when you're speaking to the head of the organization, but what I love to do is speak to the recruitment side, that they can tell us what's actually happening. Like, do we have postings that nobody's responding to? Are we hiring people? Because we also look at the institutions that provide the training, because we don't provide the training. The training happens at other organizations. The majority of our students are Pima Community College students, and we just add that extra layer of support. And so we want to know from employers whether the education that the students are getting at one or other organization is really getting the job done, so that they're ready to work on day one. And I'll tell you, we get rave reviews for Pima Community College. And then there have been other organizations that the reviews aren't so great, and our students aren't getting hired. And so we might pull back from that institution until we start seeing some better reviews from the employers. So that way we know that our students are getting the best possible education, and they're set up to not only get the next job, which is really important, right? It's that great first job, sometimes the first time that they have benefits and, you know, all of that infrastructure that makes a job sustainable.
And actual career path versus a job attainment.
We want them to be the first in line for a promotion.
Yes.
We want them to keep growing in that organization.
That's wonderful. And I think in your explanation there, I think it may have been an eye-opener or an ear-opener to our listeners to understand one thing that you said there is that Job Path isn't executing on the training. You're working with other organizations who are doing the teaching and training, but you have coaches, so to speak, in your staff that help keep the students going, almost like counselors to compare to like high school where you have a counselor that's helping guide you in your field. Is that kind of what Job Path is also doing, is making sure that you're providing resources and information, but sort of guiding the students along whenever they have a success or a challenge?
That is exactly right. And I'm just so proud of the team of coaches that we have. They are absolutely amazing. And I would say that they are our secret sauce, because every participant is assigned to a coach, and then that coach becomes their person, their shoulder to cry on when things aren't going well, and their biggest cheerleader when things do go well. You'd be surprised. There's a lot of people in our community that don't have that kind of support mm-hmm. at home, or they're new to the area. You know, for whatever reason, they may not be getting that anywhere else. And so our coaches are there for that emotional support. They're also a conduit to resources throughout the community. We work with lots of other nonprofits that provide other services that we don't. So, for example, ICS can help with food when food becomes a problem. That's not something that we do. The Southern Arizona Diaper Bank, we don't do diapers, but we do have their diapers that we can distribute to our students who have little babies at home.
That's wonderful.
Because, you know, those are very expensive.
They are very expensive and can take a lot of time. Resources are important, and we're going to talk about that more when we come back after this commercial break. Thank you for listening to Rainmakers. We're here on a sunny St. Patrick's Day with Dr. Anna Greif. Check back with us after the commercial break. Good morning. We are here on Monday morning, St. Patrick's Day, listening to the lovely When Irish Eyes Are Smiling. And we are here for our second half hour of The Rainmakers, the morning show that talks about those people, initiatives, and organizations that are making great things happen here in our Southern Arizona. And we have a great example this morning with Dr. Anna Greif, who is CEO of Job Path. Not only is Job Path one of those organizations that makes great things happen, creates pathways and opportunities for its students, but Anna, as CEO, has a lean, mean team. It's not a huge team, but the folks that are there are great coaches, great listeners, great advisors, and folks who get hands-on not only with the students, but with the industries and companies that are trying to hire the students to make sure that all points are connected and the most information, the most resources possible can be available for those students in their path. Tell me, Anna, what is just a day-to-day, you know, what happens on a daily basis in Job Path? You walk in to your office, you're surrounded by this few but mighty and strong people that are in touch with hundreds of students every day. What kind of challenges come up on a daily basis that you and your team need to solve?
Oh, that's a great question. So I will answer that from the perspective of our coaches.
Okay.
Because nobody wants to hear about accounting challenges. Our coaches are in constant communication with students. We require our students to check in at least once a month. Just let us know. Everything's fine. I don't need anything. Just know that I'm doing just fine. Or, well, I'm struggling with a class. I don't know what to do about registering for next semester. My car broke down. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever is going on, they'll let their coaches know. And then the coaches will troubleshoot with them. And they'll help them, you know, figure out a resource, a connection, a referral to another organization. Or if they need financial help, they'll go through the process of requesting the help. All of the funding that goes out to students is on a reimbursement basis, or we may pay a vendor directly. So okay. If you're getting your car fixed, we might send the check directly to the mechanic. But if a student is requesting help, you know, for rent or books or whatever the case may be, they do have to give us a receipt and they have to show us that the money was actually spent. Like, we have very rigorous tracking policies to make sure that there's no fraud, there's no misuse of the funds, because again, we do use public funds.
That's great. It sounds like you have a lot of attention to being good stewards of that funding, which is so important for donors to hear. Mm-hmm. I imagine because you are a nonprofit, so you probably have not only dependency on stakeholders in the community who want to see you succeed and need for you to succeed. And so perhaps they can underwrite or co-write or sponsor some of the initiatives and efforts that you have. But I would imagine private donors, also individuals or maybe past students, you know, alums, mm-hmm. graduates of your wonderful programs may want to come and donate back either in their time or talent, but certainly treasure. And you want to be able to show other donors that yes, this is how we make sure that the money is going where it needs to go. So important these days. One thing that has struck me is JobPath seems to be very locally supported, you know, by county or cities that it touches, or the institutions that are here in Southern Arizona that you focus on. Do some of your students go statewide? Do they end up in programs that maybe are headquartered in other parts of the state, or is this a Southern Arizona only focus?
We don't discourage students from going wherever it is that they need to go to make a life for themselves, obviously. Okay. But I cannot think of a single example of a student that has gone to work somewhere else after going through our program, because our connections are with the local employers.
Sure.
We are embedded, especially we do support a lot of students in healthcare fields and, mm-hmm. You know, El Rio, Banner, TMC. These are all institutions that are, Banner is not local, but the operations that we work with are here, the local ones.
Right, the local facilities, mm-hmm. local leadership. Well, and, you know, Southern Arizona, for those folks who don't know, you know, Tucson is merely one city here in Pima County, and Pima County is very much connected to our neighboring county, Santa Cruz, Cochise, even Pinal. And I wonder, you as someone who grew up in Cochise County, I loved your commentary about what your experience in growing up on a cattle ranch, growing up in the agricultural area, growing up in a rural community or more rural community in a smaller town, gave you a perspective of, like you said, hands-on or problem-solving or different kinds of experiences that have led to you understanding the impact of STEM, you understanding the impact of education, and that meaning can be so different for folks. I wonder, I'm always curious of what kind of students are coming up. They may not be only urban students. They may not be just folks who are growing up perhaps near the community college or near the U of A campus, but perhaps you're coming from outlying areas of Pima County or even neighboring counties. But that's an assumption on my part. Am I correct in that?
Well, I think you are. One of the things growing up in Douglas that I've found and I think is kind of shown through, there's just not a lot of really good paying jobs mm-hmm. in our rural communities, which is unfortunate. So you have a couple of pathways. You can start your own business, which a lot of people do, and is a key part of the economic development of these communities. But unfortunately, many times you have to leave.
Sure.
And now we've seen a series of retirements happening in those communities, and again in healthcare in particular, but also in, I think, across the board, these rural communities are like, wait, don't leave, we have jobs for you right here. So how do we come together and figure out a way to ensure that folks that want to stay in those communities, which a lot of people do because it's a beautiful way of living, mm-hmm. That they know what careers to go into that will allow them to stay and allow them a career that will give them the security that they want for themselves and their families. So there's some really interesting initiatives happening. Arizona Complete Health is leading the way with Cochise County with a healthcare workforce kind of group that are trying to bring in funding for Cochise County, and that's great. And for us, we've been expanding our footprint into some of the neighboring counties, because what we've seen is for example, here at Pima Community College, their healthcare programs are full. They're at capacity.
Sure.
Right. And so some students choose to go to Cochise County, to Cochise College, to get their nursing degree there.
And there are two campuses in which they can do that.
Yes.
One in Sierra Vista and one over in Douglas. So that makes it accessible for even more people around Cochise County to have some options.
Absolutely. And so what we've found is that the county borders are absolutely porous.
Yes.
Right? They're just a made up thing. And so,
like all borders.
And so we see students that come up to Pima County to learn something that they're going to take back. Some folks that are there that don't want to leave. Some folks that are here that want to go there. And so we are looking for ways to figure out our funding structure so that we are very firmly Pima County based. That is our core of operations. But how can we also support the neighboring communities that ultimately make up our very rich region?
Absolutely. Well, that's so important. I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I, like you, view our region that way. I see that there are opportunities that we can all learn from each other. Each of us has different expertise in organizations, or maybe just because we were formulated in a particular city or county doesn't mean that we don't have opportunity elsewhere. And as you said, your partners, your collaborators include those corporations or those medium or small size businesses that are looking for the workforce. So where they grow or change or shift also has an impact on how you can deliver. So, and people do get on the freeway and, you know, travel back and forth. And like you said, it's a very come and go, porous exchange between counties. So I'm so glad that JobPath has that vision under your leadership and under the hardworking coaches and supporters that you have. It sounds like we're making a big impact. We are getting very close to going on our next commercial break already. You're listening to Rainmakers, part of the Morning Voice here at KVO.
And a reminder, the Morning Voice is having an meet and greet this Thursday, March 20th, 5:30 to 7 o'clock, Bamboo View Restaurant, 7018 East Golf Links. It's at the southwest corner of Golf Links and Kolb. All the Morning Voice folks will be there to meet you and say hi and hear from you. So we'll see you on Thursday. Now back to Lydia.
And we're back here at Morning Rainmakers, Monday morning on a St. Patrick's Day with guest Dr. Anna Greif, CEO of JobPath. And Anna, you are definitely making it rain for students and companies here in Tucson, helping them find each other and helping the workers, the employees, be more trained and more knowledgeable. And the companies benefit from that. And when people work and become more secure in their career pathway, instead of just job to job, they actually are building their careers. Sustainability helps everyone involved in the community, don't you think?
Absolutely.
And I love that also together making it rain for the communities at large because of the connection of resources, not only financial, but that educational piece, that informational piece. I've always been a firm believer that we all go down in a community, whether in our family or in a larger societal community, that we don't know what we don't know, and we need people to help inform us on that. And it sounds like JobPath is absolutely doing that for all involved. And with that, you're building the resources, but you need resources too. You know, JobPath needs to make sure that their funding, which sounds like predominantly is local, which that's a great thing, but there is some federal aspect to that. And I have to imagine in today's world, that becomes a little uncertain. So it sounds like perhaps there's some creative things you're doing to keep in touch with current funders, but actually grab the interest of maybe new donors, new supporters, new resource givers. Is that correct?
That is absolutely true. We are, like I said, we are very much locally funded, and we're very grateful to our partnerships with the county and the city. And we enjoyed federal funding during the COVID relief era, where there was a lot of federal funding available. And we were hoping to extend that. We were hoping to keep applying for federal funding. Once you create the infrastructure to be able to have like the level of scrutiny that the federal government requires, mm-hmm. well, once you establish that, you have it, right? And so it's a good thing to continue going out for those federal funds, which we don't think are going to be there for at least the next couple of years, right? That's what we've been hearing from the federal government, reduction in spending and all that. So that impacts us in a couple of ways. Number one is a lost opportunity. That we thought that was going to be there. It's not. So now we've got to pivot. The other concern is how that decrease in federal spending is going to impact our local governments, which is where we get our funding.
Sure.
So as we see the city and the county struggling with their own budgets, we know that the money that comes to us might be reduced as well. So there are some concerns. The good news is that we have great partnerships with local employers, and we want more partnerships with local employers because that really helps us set our priorities in terms of what programs we're going to support. Mm-hmm. Employers tell us, we put the word out to our students, and we increase interest and traffic to those agencies. So for example, we have a great partnership with Bayada Home Health. They were struggling to get nursing students to be interested in home healthcare settings. So we developed a program where they gave us a really nice amount of money and to sponsor students to do these short stints at Bayada to learn more about the different opportunities that they offer. And so it was a win-win. Students got money, we got money, and Bayada got people interested in that healthcare setting that otherwise never would have known it was available.
That's great. And not only interested, but it sounds like some hands-on, some real-time knowledge about what a shift of that type of a career or that specialization. Home health is different than in when you do an in-house in a hospital or clinic or a doctor's office. So it's different when you're in home health, but so much more needed, it sounds like, these days as our population continues to age in place or wants to age in place. We need more home health care workers. And also sounds like that can be a very, not only lucrative, but a very flexible type of career, because often, as I understand it at least, home health care providers can choose their schedule of working, so that can be very adaptable as maybe individuals or families have to go through their own shifts or changes to employment situations or employment needs.
That is all very true. And one thing that really struck me that we heard from students that were doing this program is that in a hospital setting, in a clinic setting, it's one patient after the other, right? It's just one patient with a problem and then another one. And you never really build a relationship with those patients. Sure. And in a home healthcare setting, you build a relationship with the patient. You've got just a handful of patients and you get to know them, you get to know their families, and it really becomes a much deeper relationship with a patient. And for some folks, that's a much better proposition.
Well, so many great examples that you've shared with us today about how workforce and community come together. JobPath is making such a great difference. And Anna, you are making a great difference in the leadership that you have, not only at JobPath, but out in the community with so many other organizations. As we wrap up this morning's show and today's episode of Rainmakers, tell folks how they can find out more and donate to JobPath. Is it on your website? Is there a phone number? Is it both?
It is at our website at jobpath.org. And if you are an individual and you would like to support our students, please donate on the website. And if you're an employer and you're interested in partnering with us, we've got information for you on the website as well.
Fantastic. It's been wonderful having you here this morning on Rainmakers. Anna, we wish you and the JobPath team much success and extra Irish luck today.
Thank you so much.
Good morning. We are back for our second hour of Rainmakers here on a Monday morning as part of the Morning Voice radio show on KVOI. Our listeners are probably enjoying a wonderful, brisk, sunny St. Patrick's Day. Isn't that right, Matt? And even though
it won't be brisk for long, though, if it's going to be 80 85 here before in a few hours.
So. Yes, I think we're going to hit that pretty quickly. And yeah. Boy, isn't that a shift from our last couple right. of days where it's been nice.
Rain, wind.
The gusts were really getting us the last few days. Well, we're excited. We had a wonderful first hour with Dr. Anna Greif, CEO of JobPath, talking
about amazing.
So many opportunities and many things. Talk about the you don't know if you don't know. She really filled in the gaps of a lot of great things.
Yeah. I mean, just all the little things that can happen that can derail, you know, a great job.
Right.
And
somebody who's learning more and just those little things that can get in somebody's way to take them off their path.
So to come in as an organization to kind of help people through little speed bumps that can turn into big problems, that is just amazing. I never knew about that.
It's that wonderful power of coaching and kind of being alongside so people aren't on that path alone. That's
yeah.
kind of what I pulled out
yep.
of it is if we can have somebody on our shoulder or just know that someone's got our back, it really helps us along.
JobPath.org. Check them out. It's amazing what they do.
Good stuff. Well, here for our second hour, we have an equally amazing guest. We've got Bill Ackerley joining us today. Bill, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us here on Rainmakers.
Good morning, Lydia. I'd like to start out by saying, wow, what a great job you're doing as a host of this Monday morning show. When we decided we needed to add a host, we thought about you first, and you met all our expectations.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. This has been my pleasure and such an exciting adventure. And to be able to kick off everybody's week with positive stories, with opportunities to learn more, and for people to have a chance to maybe find something that they can collaborate on that bridges work, education, community, and help our Tucson and Southern Arizona region thrive.
Right, and you can take a grumpy Monday and put a little sunshine in it.
Oh, well, thank you. And here on a St. Patrick's Monday, we are enjoying having a little bit of that Irish luck. I know that you are Irish in your heritage, yes?
I've got a bit of a leprechaun in me, yes, I do.
Well, we'll have to see what kind of gold coins we all get by the end of this. Certainly for our listeners, want to let everybody know a little bit more about your background, Bill. Some folks know you very much for your hard work as co-owner and producer of Ackerley Advertising for many, many decades. You seem to have been absolutely using your talents in the graphic arts, radio and TV production, media production. I know that you are a great event photographer in addition to being videographer. But tell us a little bit about what pulled you into that career, that specialty of a field.
Well, of course, my parents had an advertising agency when I was growing up, and I remember being in eighth grade and looking at the high school, Palo Verde High School calendar and seeing photography at the back of the catalog, and I said, hey, that's what I want to do when I grow up. So it was a natural fit. I went to the University of Arizona and got a degree in radio and television, mm-hmm. which no longer exists. That's now called communications, but nonetheless, I got the degree, and then when I got out of college, I worked at several radio stations here in Tucson, and then my dad, Gene Ackerley, was named the executive director of the Elkhorn Merchants Association, and at that point, he called me up and asked me would I come back with Ed, my brother, and help run the advertising agency, because he was doing double duty, mm-hmm. and so back to the advertising agency, and then the rest is history.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's such a great legacy. And here in Southern Arizona, in Tucson in particular, when businesses are able to last the decades that your agency has been able to, there is a lot of touch going on there. There are many, many touch points. There is a lot of connection. And yet, each year we find that there are still folks who don't know or didn't understand or maybe don't know where to go. And I know that Ackerley Advertising and you, in your hard work and community outside of the agency, are making a lot of great things happen, which is what we're here to talk about here at Rainmakers, is okay. to highlight some of those things. So many community initiatives that you have your fingerprint on it that maybe folks aren't aware of. Certainly, some of the things that I'm very aware of that you have had involvement in creating and promoting and amplifying and participating in has to do with the efforts of Coaches for Charity.
Right.
You all put on many different kind of events that help bridge sports and community. I know that you have one coming up that is about raising funds for sports equipment for elementary schools, and that's something that I think you all do about three times a year. Is that correct?
We do that particular one once a year. Coaches for Charity has about four different events during the year. They're all different ones. The kickoff classic football game, the first high school football game of the season, the MLK basketball classic, which mm-hmm. happens at McHale Center, and the high school kids get to play there, and Dale Lopez's Roscoe Cougar classic, where the elementary and middle school kids get to play at the high schools for three Saturdays in a row. But my brother Ed and Janet Hare from the Doubletree Hotel started mm-hmm. this charity, and they're really two busy people. I don't know if you know that. But I was thinking one day I would like to do something that would be kind of turnkey for them, so all they have to do is show up on the day of the event so that we wouldn't pile more work onto their plates. And I came up with this idea of a bowl-a-thon, and I asked another volunteer, Alejandro Delgado Lopez, if he would want to help me on it. And he came up with the idea. Says, I'll do it if we can raise money for elementary school sports equipment. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. So this will be our fourth year coming up on June 15th. And we've raised a lot of money for schools over the year.
That's fantastic, and I know that I have participated in one of your recent bowl-a-thons, and I got to tell you, it had been quite a while since I had bowled, and it was super fun. Anybody who is wanting to maybe go into a low-pressure, high-fun, totally engaging bowl-a-thon, this one is only a couple, 3 hours, right?
Yeah, 2 hours.
And so it goes by very quickly. You're among friends. I kind of liken it to just like karaoke. Just go and have fun. It doesn't matter if you're great or not great. Just get in there, throw the ball, you know, make sure that you don't hit anybody backwards, but everything going forwards is going to be fine. And if you make a strike, even better, and it's all for a good cause.
Yeah, I've heard rumors that you're really good at karaoke. I heard about Perfidia, one particular song that you sang in public.
Oh, well, thank you for remembering that. Yes, lots of fun.
But anyway, over the years, the schools that we've given money to are Whitmore the first year, and then Monzo the second year, and then last year we gave money to Gale, and they're an Eastside school, but they were just starting their sports program, so they really needed the money.
That's fantastic. And which school is going to be coming up in June that benefits from the June Bowl-a-thon?
Yet to be decided.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that one, it sounds to me like you probably have one or two that are just making a decision, and we'll have
right.
that announcement probably in a
yeah,
few weeks.
Right.
That is fantastic. Also, you are making sure that this week's Eat and Greet is going to be a success. And what I understand we're doing with the Eat and Greets is not only making the Morning Voice team available to listeners and to other community organizations, folks who maybe are sponsoring or underwriting portions of the show, but also just anyone else who might be curious about this. And this is not a solo event. This is going to become a series that happens a few times throughout the year. Yes?
Right. And I guess it was the businessman in me that said, oh, Sally Lee over at Bamboo View, who's one of Ed's friends, is spending money on our show. And I thought, what can we do that's added value for these clients that are taking a chance advertising sure. on our show? And I asked Ed about the idea of doing the Eat and Greet, and he said, go for it. I designed the flyer, and then we were underway. But it's an idea to kind of give the client more than anything else, a visual of that, yeah, we care about them, we're bringing people over, and we're doing it. And then it's a great chance, like you said, for the people to get together and meet the host and
kind of put the face behind the voice.
Right, and unfortunately, I planned this whole thing, and then all of a sudden we got news that the women's basketball team made the WBIT, and their game is on the exact same moment that is... the meet and greet, and I am the clock operator for the women's basketball at the University of Arizona. So I'm going to have to miss the eat and greet, but I hope you'll all go over there.
Well, you know, I had heard about that. We were chatting a little bit about that. I didn't realize that game's going to be going on at the same time, and so we're going to be sorry to miss you. I am going to tell you a little secret. I also can't be at this Thursday's eat and greet, and I'm so disappointed, but I will be helping represent Arizona some other hats that I wear at a wonderful national women's conference that's happening over in Southern California later this week, for the second half of this week. So I too will be afar and was disappointed to miss this first one, but I know that you and I will keep going to the eat and greets in the second one. But I want to come back to that women's basketball role that you have. It's very exciting. I know we're getting really close to a commercial break here, but let's give folks just a little bit of a teaser. You are the clock operator for women's basketball, doing that for how many years now?
I really wish I could count. I know I started with Joan Bonvicini, and we went through the Nia Butts years, and then now Adia Barnes is there. But
Wow. It's
been a long time. It's too long for me to remember, actually. I think my daughter's 25. I think I started before she was born, so it's been a while.
So it's been a nice run so far, and many more years to go. Well, when we come back after our commercial break, you'll hear more with Bill Ackerley. I'm Lydia Aranda, and this is Morning Rainmakers on The Morning Voice, KVOI. And we're back. This is Rainmakers. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda, on this sunny Monday morning, this sunny St. Patrick's Day. And our guest for this hour is Bill Ackerley of Ackerley Advertising. Hi, Bill.
Nice to see you.
Nice to have you here for this this happy Irish day. Mm-hmm. And right before the break, our listeners might remember that, might have heard that we were speaking not only about your multiple careers that you've had in radio production and TV production, but also being co-owner and producer of Ackerley Advertising, the legacy family organization and agency that's been here in Tucson for many, many years. Certainly the creators of The Morning Voice, the show that we're working on now. So it's very nice to have you here in studio.
Right. And I'm listening very critically to how you do the show, because I am one of the decision makers. I'm kidding.
That's true. Nothing like a little pressure. Matt Neely and I are sitting up a little straighter this morning.
Okay.
We're glad to have you here talking about community engagement and how organizations, whether they are agencies like Ackerley Advertising or whether they are institutions like the U of A, where, by the way, you served as a clock operator for many decades for women's basketball, for U of A women's basketball, Wildcats. Thank you so much for doing that. But how groups can get together with other organizations or industries to to help support causes that are good for community. We were talking a little bit about sports and the link of sports, business, and community with Coaches for Charity and other like initiatives that help bring attention and much needed funding to students in the area of sports to help them achieve their well-being, to help them perhaps start a career. What other things go on at Coaches for Charity?
Well, you know, as you say, you can have all the great ideas in the world, and unless you get support from the community, you're not going to go anywhere. So it's pretty much a year-round job for the five different events we have for Coaches for Charity. I'm already sending out email blasts for the bowl-a-thon to try to get people to bowl. I should say it's if you want 6 to 4 people to bowl, it's a $250 fee, and it's worth it because you get free pizza and free soda along with it. But just making that sales call, making that extra sales call on behalf of a charity is what a lot of people don't see. That's the behind the scenes part, and getting people to donate items for a silent auction, or getting a company to sponsor a team. And this year, I think I'm going to try something different. I think I'm going to call it Pick Up a Spare.
Oh, I love that.
Where an individual can, for like $39.99, can come and bowl and not have to shell out the $250 and
for a whole team, almost like in golf when people can sponsor a foursome,
right,
or folks can come up as an individual and get placed,
right,
into an incomplete. I like that. Pick up a spare, might get more people just walking up, or planning to join even the week of or the day of.
Yeah, like my roommate, he can't afford $250, but he can certainly afford $40 to come and play, and then.
And it all goes to a good cause, students.
And meet some new people, too, you know, because you'll be put with somebody you don't know.
And that's what we try to do, is connect the dots, right, and bring people together. That's really what community initiatives are all about. It's certainly what this show and what the entire Morning Voice show is about on Trusted Local News and Talk 1030 The Voice. We love the Morning Voice because it brings a lot of initiatives together so that folks know what's going on, how they can get involved, and also what they can do to make a difference. To that end, let me highlight that you are also an author, William Ackerley.
True. I have one published book, many written.
Well, the published book that I'm holding in my hands is called Creating Copy, and you wrote this to help not only share the wisdom and the tips and tricks perhaps that you had learned in your career about writing advertising copy, but how to really arrange copy in a logical progression that educates as well as entertains not only folks reading the book, but really how they can translate that into their own messaging, what they're trying to get out perhaps to their public. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, what I found when I was as a professional copywriter, a lot of our clients were mom and pop shops, the people that don't have massive budgets. And it dawned on me that if you're not Nike, if you're not McDonald's or Coca-Cola, you're writing copy a lot different than those people are. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't afford just to put a swish on the end of a commercial and make it work. So this, and a lot of the things I learned in that book were from my dad, who had a long career in the radio business and then forward to the advertising agency, was just little things like, I coined the phrases, but I call it internal frequency. And that's where you repeat the name of the business over and over again in the copy, even though it sounds funny to write, it sounds funny to read. The listener's not hearing it as funny, but they're getting the message. They're getting the name of the copy. I listen to a lot of local commercials, and I, like, say for a concert or something like that, and they'll talk about it. And if they've given the date and the time and the location in the first part of the commercial, by the time you decide you wanted to go, you know, where is it? When is it? You know, that kind of a thing.
Yes, so, you have to repeat and repeat and tell it again.
All right. And if you don't have a large budget, you can afford to get the repetition with the buy.
Sure.
If you have a small budget, you're going to have to get it in the copy. And that was the main takeaway from that book, is that it's a different kind of writing when you're writing for smaller budgets.
I think that's really wonderful that you have put that together, and I have to imagine it's been useful. It's something that transcends time, because it's useful to businesses, small, medium, sole proprietors, anybody who's doing that. And so that's helpful generation after generation.
Right. And the way I wrote the book is I sat down and wrote it, and then I went and got, I think it was 15 either textbooks or regular books about advertising and advertising copywriting. And I read all those books after I wrote the book.
Oh.
And then I put...
Did it validate what you had written?
Yeah. And if I saw something that agreed with me, I put a poll quote in it. And you know, so it was like... and then it really was... I was a good copywriter before I wrote the book, but I think afterwards it gave me the language to tell clients why I do the things I do and why are you repeating my name so much and stuff like that, you know, because it sounds silly when you're just looking at it, reading it off a page. But
and being an expert in the field, no matter what, it's always hard, though, to make sure that the client is coming along on the journey,
right,
that they actually hired you to lead them on. But,
right,
but still, it's not usually in their wheelhouse. Well, similar to what you're doing with Coaches for Charities and some of the other initiatives by writing a book to help inform your clients. You're also doing so much more out there by supporting other causes that may be the brainchild of others.
Right.
In this case, I want to bring attention to an initiative that your own daughter, Hunter, started quite some years ago, and I've been very privileged to be a part of this in many different capacities over the years. But let's talk a little bit about CCAP Across the Map and the work that it does, and that she and you, in supporting her and helping her launch this, which in Women's History Month, I have to say it's very important that we highlight the men and the fathers and the brothers and the bosses and the partners that help support the work that women do. So Hunter, as your daughter and as a wonderful young woman in this world, is working very hard to make a difference in cervical cancer awareness and prevention, not just here in Tucson or in Southern Arizona, but around the world. So tell us more about CCAP Across the Map.
So when she was a senior in high school, she had a best friend, and they went to a Starbucks and sat down and said, one was going to ASU and the other one was going to go to the University of Arizona. And they said, what are we going to do now? We're splitting apart. We're best friends. And they came up with this idea. They both went to Catalina Foothills, and they came up with this idea to start this charity. They had both had people in their family that were affected by cervical cancer, and they decided that there's kind of a hole in the whole cancer thing for that
that particular cancer kind.
Right, and so, yeah, we can talk more about it, but as a dad, I was 100% behind the both of them, and help them as much as I can.
Well, you've made a big difference. And when we come back after this next commercial break, we'll talk a little bit more about the initiatives that have happened and also what's coming up.
Okay.
You're listening to Rainmakers, KVOI, The Morning Voice. And we're back on Rainmakers. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda. And in our studio, as our guest this hour, is Mr. Bill Ackerley, co-owner and producer of Ackerley Advertising, and also author of Creating Copy, a book that was published to help clients and lay folk understand a little bit more about advertising and giving the tips and tricks of an industry that really touches everyone, businesses from sole proprietors up to global corporations and then some. Bill, it's nice to have you here this morning.
Thank you, Lydia. I appreciate being here.
We were talking right before the commercial break about many different initiatives in the community and also your support of others who are passionate about certain issues, including your daughter, Hunter, who started CCAP Across the Map many years ago when she was embarking on her college career. She's now in her mid-20s, is that correct?
Right. She's currently working on a master's degree at NAU. She's taking classes here in Tucson, but she's going to get a master's degree in psychology.
Fantastic. And she's made a big difference in bringing attention to cervical cancer awareness and prevention, which is so important. And she's not doing that just here for Southern Arizona or even the southwestern states of our great country, but she is focusing on global impact. Is that right?
Right. You know, in the United States, we're pretty much covered with the vaccine for HPV. I think that's what it is, but that vaccine. But in other other countries, there needs to be an awareness campaign to realize how important that vaccine is, because you could practically eradicate cervical cancer if everyone who was eligible got that vaccine. And so Hunter and her partner Jill have made trips to other countries. Their first one was in 2020 to Jalisco, Mexico. And we say Jalisco is where they went, but they were really in the rural areas down there.
Mm-hmm.
And in Mexico, when you're a 12-year-old girl, the government pays for the vaccine, but you got to go to one of the bigger towns to get the vaccine.
Sure.
So their initiative was to go down there, go to the little clinics, where the medical clinics in the rural areas, and teach those people that when your daughter's 12, that's the
That's the best age to try to tackle this.
That's the year you go into the city.
Sure.
Because if she's 13, for some reason, she's no longer eligible for it or something like that. And the other thing they found down there is they weren't giving the vaccine to the young boys. And that they were able to talk to some of the hospitals and say, hey, you know, the boys don't have the danger of cervical cancer, but they can become a spreader. And you can make matters better by vaccinating them as well.
Both. Yeah. Well, and that's one of those things that information is key, understanding the whole situation of impact and understanding other kinds of causes around the most straightforward approach to whatever the health issue is. In this case, not only awareness about cervical cancer, but awareness on how to prevent it from both sides. Both genders and being able to not spread. What I like also is that with such attention to prevention, it sounds like Hunter and all of the folks, including the supporters and sponsors of CCAP across the map, are understanding where they can get involved. And it might be simply to raise money so that more awareness campaigns can be put forth. It might be to raise funding or other connections so that a tie-in or being a conduit to other countries or under other organizations that are also involved in this kind of health prevention of cancer, and particularly of female-specific cancers. You know, and that includes not just cervical cancer, but breast cancer, ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, and vaginal cancer. So those cancers are very important to tackle early. They are very unseen often until the situation is more dire. So again, awareness and information is key, and it sounds like you're doing a great job not only in encouraging Hunter and her colleagues to do this, to do more in this area, but you're making it easier by using your skills to help amplify the attention.
Right. And I couldn't be prouder of the two girls. They're so courageous when they go. They've also made trips to Africa. They've been to both Ghana and Uganda.
Wow.
And you know, when you're a dad and your daughter is getting on a plane and flying off to Uganda, you're like, oh my goodness.
Yes.
I'm just like, yeah.
Godspeed.
But they're so courageous. I say they're like a couple of lionesses when they go to these people. And they, in those African countries, they were dealing more with the midwives and the midwifery, and they were having clinics with them. And they were showing them a very simple way to test for the lesions for the HPPV with common household items. It was just another way to get those midwives involved in helping eradicate cervical cancer. So.
Well, thank you for all that work, and thanks to Hunter. I know that we'd love to have her on the show going forward, and particularly attentions to public health issues can be touchy, but also are so important, because at the end of the day, without our health, we really don't have anything. We cannot be the best at our work. We cannot study to our highest ability, can't perform. So health is so important. And in a household, having health of parents and kids, you know, it's just something that's ongoing and needs lots of attention, and really falls in that category of you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And so asking or being able to even find somebody to ask who might be an expert and be able to help navigate a situation and inform someone about what choices they have for either tackling a health issue or maybe preventing a health crisis.
Right. And I think our next hurdle with them going forward is figuring out how to get grant money, figuring out how to get donations. Mm-hmm. You know, you were talking about the bowl-a-thons. We do have a second bowl-a-thon in January that supports cervical cancer awareness and prevention.
Yes.
And that's the one you were at, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, every little bit helps, especially when they make a trip. You know, they plan a trip. I think when the last time they went to Africa, they budgeted $10,000 to make the trip, and they had to raise that money before they could go.
Sure.
So, you know, getting help from people, getting help from family and friends, and doing events, doing restaurant nights. I can't remember the name of the jeweler that they do. Very famous jeweler who started out as online jewelry, but I can't remember her name right now, but they have an event with them where any jewelry they sell that day, they get a 10%.
So lots of creative ways to raise much needed resources. But I would imagine now also in the field of, because this is in the field of women's health or public health or preventative, a preventing crisis and engaging ahead of time, that organizations even far beyond our Southern Arizona community would be interested in helping. So hopefully we can help Hunter bridge those connections even more and perhaps participate in multiples that will set them up for ongoing success. So
you never really stop learning. I'm heading from here at 10 o'clock. I have a two-hour seminar on a grant writing class that's being taught by a woman out of a I think she's out of California, but
the Grantsmanship Center.
Maybe. I'm not exactly sure where she's from. She has her own company.
Yes,
she has her own company.
Grant writing is much needed skill all over, and I know for a fact that you've written grants in the past. But it is one of those things that every year a refresher, every couple of years learning something new about what's happening in the grant making world, because things change. It's not the same. It's never a cut and paste and you're done. You know, lots of good attention to a request helps benefit all, and that's how we make a difference in community, and that's how we make it rain for lots of nonprofits. So I'm so excited to hear that you're doing that. I participate in things like that as well. We'll have to compare notes.
One thing that I've learned from this seminar I'm at is that I spent my whole life writing advertising copy where you kind of make it simple, direct, but
slogany.
And I've been writing grants that way for all these years and not getting the grant. And I found out that
they want a little more in depth.
You know, it's a little more
of a story.
It's at the college level at least.
Yes.
You know, the words they use and the facts and the figures and the stuff like that. And, you know, here I was using anecdotes and slogans and stuff like that and wondering why I didn't get the grant. But now I think I'm learning that you have to up your level a little bit, even though I spent my whole...
It's just a different kind of storytelling than perhaps in an advertising. So we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get back. We're about to take a break. You're listening to Rainmakers on The Morning Voice, KVOI, 1030 AM. And we're back with Rainmakers on this sunny St. Patrick's Day Monday morning, March 17th, here in Tucson, Arizona. I'm Lydia Aranda, your host of Rainmakers, and we've been speaking this hour with Bill Ackerley. Bill, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Great.
It's been fun this morning talking to you.
Well, thanks for being here. We appreciate all the insights and tips and tricks that you've been sharing with us, as well as the great work that happens out of Ackerley Advertising and that you do in support of so many external causes involving sports, women, students, and just coming together to make our community a better place where everyone can thrive. Certainly appreciate all your efforts.
It kind of comes naturally to the advertising agency, because when you help a business person, a man or a woman who owns a business, generally they come to you after you've helped them for a couple of months or a couple of years even and say, I belong to this organization and we need your help. So Ed and I, over the years, we've gained so much input into all the organizations that all of our clients are kind of a part of over the years. So I remember one year we sent out a news release to all our media outlets. This was maybe a couple decades ago, but we sent it out just to thank them for everyone that we helped with that year. And we had like 87 logos on it of the nonprofits that we helped that year.
Oh, so, goodness. And just of that year, I'm sure it is multiple pages by now.
Right, yeah.
And I dare say that was sort of the concept of the birth of The Morning Voice, this show that we are participating on, and its predecessor, which was of the last year, the radio show that's been Jump in Tucson, thank you. And the concept about all of that is to have positive talk radio. Jump in Tucson was very focused on the aspects of Tucson-oriented successes in many different ways, engagement, tourism, small business, the wonders at U of A, restauranting, and the foodie industry. And we're continuing that on The Morning Voice now with an amplified and extended messaging, the interaction with clients, and being in the morning drive time.
Right. And if anybody in the time we have left here, if anybody is interested in bowling, they can go to coachesforcharity.org, and there's a little tab on the top on the menu, and it just says Bowl-a-thon. And once again, that Saturday, June 14th, is when we'll have that at the Lucky Strike Bowl over on Speedway.
And folks can start putting their bowling teams together now. Like right. You said, it's never too early to start assembling that, or maybe becoming a donor of a raffle item or a sponsor of the event together. Also, shout out for the Eat and Greet. The Eat and Greet that is happening. Invited to meet members of the Morning Voice team at Bamboo View Restaurant. And Bamboo View has been a supporter of the Morning Voice show. We've enjoyed talking about all of these connections of business, workforce, community. And Bill, I'm going to say we need to continue to have you in front of people understanding, especially students, that if they're interested in a career in radio production or other type of graphic arts and production, you'd be a great resource and a mentor to them of how they can launch a fabulous career like you've had, certainly like our producer Matt Neely has. And so much can happen by those connections and by sharing stories, and that's what we're about here this morning on Rainmakers.
Right, absolutely.
Well, it's been a pleasure. We are together on a St. Patrick's Day. I know that we've got more to come for not only the rest of today that's going to be sunny and already is warming up quite nicely, but Matt, thank you so much for all your support. I see you wearing your Kiss Me, I'm Irish t-shirt.
You got it. You got to.
We're celebrating Irish heritage today, and lots of green walking around the studio here. Bill, wonderful to have you this morning, and I know that you have been contributing to so much. Thank you for all you do in community.
And go Wildcats. We got both men and women playing this week, so hopefully they'll both be winners.
Bear down.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much to all our morning listeners. We hope you enjoy your St. Patrick's Day. You've been listening to Rainmakers. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda, on this Monday episode of Rainmakers, part of The Morning Voice.